Deities, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. A trainee. These six things lead to the decline of a mendicant trainee. What six? They relish work, talk, sleep, and company. They don't guard the sense doors, and they eat too much. These six things lead to the decline of a mendicant trainee. These six things don't lead to the decline of a mendicant trainee. What six? They don't relish work, talk, sleep, and company. They guard the sense doors, and they don't eat too much. These six things don't lead to the decline of a mendicant trainee. Non-decline, first. Then late at night, a glorious deity lighting up the entire Jetas Grove went up to the Buddha, bowed, stood to one side and said to him, Sir, these six things don't lead to the decline of a mendicant. What six? Respect for the teacher, for the teaching, for the sangha, for the training, for diligence, and for hospitality. These six things don't lead to the decline of a mendicant. That's what the deity said, and the teacher approved. Then that deity, knowing that the teacher approved, bowed and respectfully circled the Buddha, keeping him on his right before vanishing right there. Then when the night had passed, the Buddha told the mendicants all that had happened, adding, Respect for the teacher and the teaching, and keen respect for the sangha, a mendicant who respects diligence and hospitality can't decline, and has drawn near to extinguishment. Non-decline, second. Tonight, a glorious deity, lighting up the entire Jetas Grove, came to me, bowed, stood to one side and said to me, Sir, these six things don't lead to the decline of a mendicant. What six? Respect for the teacher, for the teaching, for the sangha, for the training, for conscience and for prudence. These six things don't lead to the decline of a mendicant. That is what the deity said. Then he bowed and respectfully circled me, keeping me on his right before vanishing right there. Respect for the teacher and the teaching, and keen respect for the sangha, having both conscience and prudence, reverential and respectful. Such a one can't decline, and has drawn near to extinguishment. With Maha Moggallana. At one time the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in Jetas Grove, an Ottapindika's monastery. Then, as Venerable Maha Moggallana was in private retreat, this thought came to his mind. Which gods know that they are stream enterers, not liable to be reborn in the underworld, bound for awakening? Now at that time a monk called Tissa had recently passed away and been reborn in a Brahma realm. There they knew that Tissa the Brahma was mighty and powerful. And then, Venerable Maha Moggallana, as easily as a strong person would extend or contract their arm, vanished from Jetas Grove and reappeared in that Brahma realm. Tissa saw Moggallana coming off in the distance and said to him, Come, my good Moggallana. Welcome, my good Moggallana. It's been a long time since you took the opportunity to come here. Sit, my good Moggallana. This seat is for you. Moggallana sat down on the seat spread out. Then Tissa bowed to Moggallana and sat to one side. Moggallana said to him, Tissa, which gods know that they are stream enterers, not liable to be reborn in the underworld, bound for awakening? The gods of the four great kings know this. But do all of them know this? No, my good Moggallana, not all of them. Those who lack experiential confidence in the Buddha, the teaching, and the Sangha, and lack the ethics loved by the noble ones, do not know that they are stream enterers. But those who have experiential confidence in the Buddha, the teaching, and the Sangha, and have the ethics loved by the noble ones, do know that they are stream enterers. But Tissa, is it only the gods of the four great kings who know that they are stream enterers, or do the gods of the 33, the gods of Yama, the joyful gods, the gods who love to create, and the gods who control the creations of others, know that they are stream enterers, not liable to be reborn in the underworld, bound for awakening? The gods of these various classes know this, but do all of them know this? No, my good Moggallana, not all of them. Those who lack experiential confidence in the Buddha, the teaching, and the Sangha, and lack the ethics loved by the noble ones, do not know that they are stream enterers. But those who have experiential confidence in the Buddha, the teaching, and the Sangha, and have the ethics loved by the noble ones, do know that they are stream enterers. Moggallana approved and agreed with what Tissa the Brahma said. Then, as easily as a strong person would extend or contract their arm, he vanished from that Brahma realm and reappeared in Jeta's Grove. Things that play a part in realization. These six things play a part in realization. What six? The perception of impermanence, the perception of suffering in impermanence, the perception of not self in suffering, the perception of giving up, the perception of fading away, and the perception of cessation. These are the six things that play a part in realization. Roots of arguments. Mendicants, there are these six roots of arguments. What six? Firstly, a mendicant is irritable and hostile. Such a mendicant lacks respect and reverence for the teacher, the teaching, and the Sangha, and they don't fulfil the training. They create a dispute in the Sangha, which is for the hurt and unhappiness of the people, for the harm, hurt, and suffering of gods and humans. If you see such a root of arguments in yourselves or others, you should try to give up this bad thing. If you don't see it, you should practice so that it doesn't come up in the future. That's how to give up this bad root of arguments so it doesn't come up in the future. Furthermore, a mendicant is offensive and contemptuous. They're jealous and stingy, devious and deceitful, with corrupt wishes and wrong view. They're attached to their own views, holding them tight and refusing to let go. Such a mendicant lacks respect and reverence for the teacher, the teaching, and the Sangha, and they don't fulfil the training. They create a dispute in the Sangha, which is for the hurt and unhappiness of the people, for the harm, hurt, and suffering of gods and humans. If you see such a root of arguments in yourselves or others, you should try to give up this bad thing. If you don't see it, you should practice so that it doesn't come up in the future. That's how to give up this bad root of arguments so it doesn't come up in the future. These are the six roots of arguments. A gift with six factors. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in Jeta's Grove, an Artapindika's monastery. Now at that time, Welukantaki, Nanda's mother, was preparing a religious donation with six factors for the mendicant Sangha headed by Sariputta and Moggallana. The Buddha saw her doing this with his clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, and he addressed the mendicants. This Welukantaki, Nanda's mother, is preparing a religious donation with six factors for the mendicant Sangha headed by Sariputta and Moggallana. And how does a religious donation have six factors? Three factors apply to the donor and three to the recipients. What three factors apply to the donor? It's when a donor is in a good mood before giving, while giving they feel confident, and after giving they're uplifted. These three factors apply to the donor. What three factors apply to the recipients? It's when the recipients are free of greed, hate, and delusion, or practicing to be free of them. These three factors apply to the recipients. Thus, three factors apply to the donor and three to the recipients. That's how a religious donation has six factors. It's not easy to grasp the merit of such a six-factored donation by saying that this is the extent of their overflowing merit, overflowing goodness that nurtures happiness and is conducive to heaven, ripening in happiness and leading to heaven. And it leads to what is likeable, desirable, agreeable to welfare and happiness. It's simply reckoned as an incalculable, immeasurable great mass of merit. It's like trying to grasp how much water is in the ocean. It's not easy to say how many gallons, how many hundreds of thousands of gallons there are. It's simply reckoned as an incalculable, immeasurable great mass of water. In the same way, it's not easy to grasp the merit of such a six-factored donation. A good mood before giving, confidence while giving, feeling uplifted after giving, this is the perfect sacrifice. Free of greed, free of hate, free of delusion, undefiled, this is the field for the perfect sacrifice, the disciplined spiritual practitioners. After rinsing, you give with your own hands. This sacrifice is very fruitful for both yourselves and others. When an intelligent, faithful person sacrifices like this, with a mind of letting go, that astute one is reborn in a happy, pleasing world. One's own volition. Then a certain Brahmin went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side and said to the Buddha, "Master Gotama, this is my doctrine and view. One does not act of one's own volition, nor does one act of another's volition." "Brahmin, may I never see or hear of anyone holding such a doctrine or view? How on earth can someone who comes and goes on his own say that one does not act of one's own volition, nor does one act of another's volition? What do you think, Brahmin? Is there an element of initiative?" "Yes, sir." "Since this is so, do we find sentient beings who initiate activity?" "Yes, sir." "Since there is an element of initiative, and sentient beings who initiate activity are found, sentient beings act of their own volition or that of another. What do you think, Brahmin? Is there an element of persistence?" "Yes, sir." "Since this is so, do we find sentient beings who are persistent?" "Yes, sir." "Since there is an element of persistence, and sentient beings who are persistent are found, sentient beings act of their own volition or that of another. What do you think, Brahmin? Is there an element of exertion?" "Yes, sir." "Since this is so, do we find sentient beings who exert?" "Yes, sir." "Since there is an element of exertion, and sentient beings who exert are found, sentient beings act of their own volition or that of another. What do you think, Brahmin? Is there an element of strength?" "Yes, sir." "Since this is so, do we find sentient beings who are strong?" "Yes, sir." "Since there is an element of strength, and sentient beings who are strong are found, sentient beings act of their own volition or that of another. What do you think, Brahmin? Is there an element of endurance?" "Yes, sir." "Since this is so, do we find sentient beings who endure?" "Yes, sir." "Since there is an element of endurance, and sentient beings who endure are found, sentient beings act of their own volition or that of another. What do you think, Brahmin? Is there an element of energy?" "Yes, sir." "Since this is so, do we find sentient beings who have energy?" "Yes, sir." "Since there is an element of energy, and sentient beings who have energy are found, sentient beings act of their own volition or that of another." "Brahmin, may I never see or hear of anyone holding such a doctrine or view? How on earth can someone who comes and goes on his own say that one does not act of one's own volition, nor does one act of another's volition?" "Excellent, Master Gotama, excellent. From this day forth, May Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. Sources. Mendicants, there are these three sources that give rise to deeds. What three? Greed, hate, and delusion are sources that give rise to deeds. Greed doesn't give rise to contentment. Rather, greed just gives rise to greed. Hate doesn't give rise to love. Rather, hate just gives rise to hate. Delusion doesn't give rise to understanding. Rather, delusion just gives rise to delusion. It's not because of deeds born of greed, hate, and delusion that gods, humans, or those in any other good places are found. Rather, it's because of deeds born of greed, hate, and delusion that hell, the animal realm, the ghost realm, or any other bad places are found. These are three sources that give rise to deeds. Mendicants, there are these three sources that give rise to deeds. What three? Contentment, love, and understanding are sources that give rise to deeds. Contentment doesn't give rise to greed. Rather, contentment just gives rise to contentment. Love doesn't give rise to hate. Rather, love just gives rise to love. Understanding doesn't give rise to delusion. Rather, understanding just gives rise to understanding. It's not because of deeds born of contentment, love, and understanding that hell, the animal realm, the ghost realm, or any other bad places are found. Rather, it's because of deeds born of contentment, love, and understanding that gods, humans, or those in any other good places are found. These are three sources that give rise to deeds. With Kimbala. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying near Kimbala in the freshwater mangrove grove. Then Venerable Kimbala went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "What is the cause, sir? What is the reason why the true teaching does not last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one?" Kimbala, "It's when the monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen lack respect and reverence for the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, diligence, and hospitality after the final extinguishment of the realized one. This is the cause. This is the reason why the true teaching does not last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one." "What is the cause, sir? What is the reason why the true teaching does last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one?" Kimbala, "It's when the monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen maintain respect and reverence for the teacher, the teaching, the sangha, the training, diligence, and hospitality after the final extinguishment of the realized one. This is the cause, this is the reason why the true teaching does last long after the final extinguishment of the realized one." A tree trunk. So I have heard. At one time, Venerable Sariputta was staying near Rajagaha on the Vulture's Peak Mountain. Then Venerable Sariputta robed up in the morning and, taking his bowl and robe, descended the Vulture's Peak together with several mendicants. At a certain spot he saw a large tree trunk, and he addressed the mendicants. "Reverends, do you see this large tree trunk?" "Yes, Reverend." "If they wanted to, a mendicant with psychic powers who has mastered their mind could determine this tree trunk to be nothing but earth." "Why is that?" "Because the earth element exists in the tree trunk. Relying on that, a mendicant with psychic powers could determine it to be nothing but earth. But if they wanted to, a mendicant with psychic powers who has mastered their mind could determine this tree trunk to be nothing but water. Or they could determine it to be nothing but fire. Or they could determine it to be nothing but air. Or they could determine it to be nothing but beautiful. Or they could determine it to be nothing but ugly. Why is that? Because the elements of water, fire, air, beauty, ugliness exists in the tree trunk. Relying on that, a mendicant with psychic powers could determine it to be nothing but water, fire, air, beautiful, ugly. With Nagita. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was wandering in the land of the Kosalans together with a large sangha of mendicants when he arrived at a village of the Kosalan Brahmins named Icharnangala. He stayed in a forest near Icharnangala. The Brahmins and householders of Icharnangala heard, "It seems the ascetic Gotama, a Sakyan gone forth from a Sakyan family, has arrived at Icharnangala. He is staying in a forest near Icharnangala. He has this good reputation. That Blessed One is perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world, with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, gods and humans, and he makes it known to others. He teaches Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well phrased, and he explains a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. It's good to see such perfected ones." Then, when the night had passed, they took many fresh and cooked foods and went to the forest near Icharnangala, where they stood outside the gates, making a dreadful racket. Now at that time, Venerable Nagita was the Buddha's attendant. Then the Buddha said to Nagita, "Nagita, who's making that dreadful racket? You'd think it was fishermen hauling in a catch." "Sir, it's these Brahmins and householders of Icharnangala. They've brought many fresh and cooked foods, and they're standing outside the gates wanting to offer it, specially to the Buddha and the mendicant Sangha." Nagita, "May I never become famous. May fame not come to me. There are those who can't get the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, the bliss of awakening when they want, without trouble or difficulty like I can. Let them enjoy the filthy, lazy pleasure of possessions, honour and popularity." "Sir, may the Blessed One please relent now. May the Holy One relent. Now is the time for the Buddha to relent. Wherever the Buddha now goes, the Brahmins and householders will incline the same way, as will the people of town and country. It's like when it rains heavily and the water flows downhill. In the same way, wherever the Buddha now goes, the Brahmins and householders will incline the same way, as will the people of town and country. Why is that? Because of the Buddha's ethics and wisdom." Nagita, "May I never become famous. May fame not come to me. There are those who can't get the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, the bliss of awakening when they want, without trouble or difficulty, like I can. Let them enjoy the filthy, lazy pleasure of possessions, honour and popularity. Take a mendicant living within a village who I see sitting immersed in samadhi. I think to myself, now a monastery worker, a novice, or a fellow practitioner will make this venerable fall from immersion. So I'm not pleased that that mendicant is living within a village. Take a mendicant in the wilderness who I see sitting nodding in meditation. I think to myself, now this venerable, having dispelled that sleepiness and weariness, will focus just on the unified perception of wilderness. So I'm pleased that that mendicant is living in the wilderness. Take a mendicant in the wilderness who I see sitting without being immersed in samadhi. I think to myself, now if this venerable's mind is not immersed in samadhi, they will immerse it, or if it is immersed in samadhi, they will preserve it. So I'm pleased that that mendicant is living in the wilderness. Take a mendicant in the wilderness who I see sitting immersed in samadhi. I think to myself, now this venerable will free the unfreed mind or preserve the freed mind. So I'm pleased that that mendicant is living in the wilderness. Take a mendicant who I see living within a village, receiving robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicines and supplies for the sick. Enjoying possessions, honour, and popularity, they neglect retreat, and they neglect remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. They come down to villages, towns, and capital cities, and make their home there. So I'm not pleased that that mendicant is living within a village. Take a mendicant who I see in the wilderness receiving robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicines and supplies for the sick. Fending off possessions, honour, and popularity, they don't neglect retreat, and they don't neglect remote lodgings in the wilderness and the forest. So I am pleased that that mendicant is living in the wilderness. Nagata, when I'm walking along a road and I don't see anyone ahead or behind, I feel relaxed, even if I need to urinate or defecate.